This is Bob, Groz, and Tom.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio and streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Welcome, everybody. It's Bob, Groz, and Tom. The show of record underway. It is a big day coming up. Day before the resumption of the Major League Baseball season. Thank goodness.
Actually, one game is on tonight, is it not?
No, the season doesn't start again until the Mariners play.
Okay.
That's how I view it.
The Cardinals and the Cubs don't count.
I don't care about those two. I care about the Mariners. That's when
it's
real.
Well, if you're a baseball fan, there's baseball on tonight.
Is it? Okay. Yes. Is that the only game going today?
I believe so.
All right. Well, good. It'll be something for some people to watch, but for me, when the Mariners start, that's when we're talking seriously, and we'll talk about what they need to do and all that good stuff. Trades are happening as we speak. We'll get into that. We'll get into some NFL talk. Our old cohort, Brady Henderson, now of ESPN.com, will join us at 1 o'clock, so we'll talk some NFL with him.
Think Brady misses us?
I think he's got a pretty good gig, man.
Okay.
He doesn't have an office to go to. He's on his own.
Okay.
Left to his own devices. It's a pretty cool gig.
All righty.
Yeah.
I understand.
And you remember when he was here, he sort of just sequestered himself out here in the newsroom away from us.
He did. Kind of, if we were paying attention, we would have noticed.
So I don't know how much he truly, we'll ask him. We'll see how much he misses us. But Brady will join us at 1 o'clock. Meanwhile, as we said, the trading season has started and it's become official with Manny Machado to the Dodgers.
Worst kept secret in baseball.
Yeah, he's doing interviews in the dugout of the All-Star game talking about the possibility of it. So there you go. There you go. They land him, and they send five prospects to the Orioles, two of which I believe were top 100 in all of baseball. Surprised at the take that they got?
For a one-year rental?
Well,
yeah, kind of. For a guy that they don't necessarily need. They got a good third baseman, and they got a good shortstop when he's healthy in Seager.
Yeah.
I wonder if this is – so, I mean, you know, kind of. Although, look, the Dodgers went to Game 7 of the World Series last year. Their season is defined by a World Series ring. Otherwise, I think you could fairly say from their standpoint, it's an unsuccessful year. I mean, you can really only hope to get to the World Series, but if they don't get there, I mean, they've had a failed season. So if they win the World Series, who cares what price you pay in future guys who may or may not be good regardless of what their ratings are. But it would obviously, for a player like Machado, who, you know, when you really look at his numbers and where he's at, you know, 25 years old and all of that, is top five player.
Mm-hmm.
There aren't many guys you can get like that. There aren't many guys, you know, Mike Trout's
like
not going to be available. Yeah.
Yeah, and he's only 26. He's
going to be 26.
He's, yeah.
So not even counting his age for the future, but just looking at his production 26. This year, there's no other players you can get that are producing like he is.
No, I mean, he's a great player. There's no two
doubt.
Ways around it. And it's always hard when you look at prospects, you're always dazzled with the potential. And this guy's a top 100, and this guy's a top 100 in all of baseball, and he's going to be a this, and he compares to that guy.
Tons of top 100s in baseball miss, as you well know, Bobby.
Yeah, and that was my point, is you hear all of these things, and they're loaded with promise, loaded with potential, and you start dreaming of it, and man, they're going to be cheap in the world of baseball dollars, and you're going to have control of them, and why would you possibly trade them? And in the end, they've proven nothing. They've done nothing at the big league level. It's as big of a crapshoot as there is in sports when you talk about baseball prospects.
Well, and baseball trades at the deadline. It goes both ways. Manny Machado may be a bust with the Dodgers.
He could, but at least he's got a proven track record.
He does have a proven track record.
And he's only 26 years old.
But even, well, and again, it's just a one-year rental at this point because he's a free agent at the end of the year. But we've seen guys come in with great fanfare and simply not work out. I mean, it's unlike any other sport. Unlike, you know, when you get a guy, you make a trade for a guy at the All-Star break in basketball, let's say, who's averaging 25 points a game. The odds are he's going to average 25 points a game for you,
mm-hmm.
right? Or in that neighborhood. I mean, he's not going to change as a player. Football, same thing. Hockey, same thing. Baseball, sometimes guys fall flat on their face. Other times you make a trade for a guy and he exceeds by a mile what you anticipate for him.
Nelson Cruz.
Yeah. So,
not a trade.
But,
free agent.
I mean,
but yeah.
Baseball is so fraught with uncertainty. And even proven commodities, switching leagues, switching teams, I mean, sometimes bust. It's just
No, they do. You're right. It's happened, and it feels like, you know, with the league switching, that became the big excuse, I felt like. Whether it was Adrian Gonzalez going from the National League to the American League and back and forth, or anybody else that's done that for that matter. you know, which to me is what made Segura such a fantastic pickup because
there was zero dip.
In fact, he went up. I mean, he led the National League in hits. You're thinking, okay, is there going to be that transition that you see a lot of times with players? They struggle? No. That to me is just another aspect of what made that a brilliant deal, how it's turned out to be such a brilliant deal along with Haniger. Outstanding. But we'll see. I mean, he's such a young guy. Again, he just turned 26 a few days ago. So he's such a young guy. I'm guessing that the Dodgers have some level, and this is me just guessing, some level of assurance that they could re-sign him. That I don't know that they'd give up that much for a guy that they were looking at for really less than half of a season in total number of games left.
Well, I would think, you know, with a guy with that talent, you'd want to re-sign him. But, I mean, you know, he's primarily a third baseman who's played 140 games at shortstop and has obviously moved to shortstop this year. Mm-hmm. They do not need a shortstop after this year. They got him for Corey Seager.
Right.
So, I mean, they are set at shortstop. Is it Justin Turner, their third baseman?
But they got it. I just don't think you – I think they're like – it's similar to what's going on with the Mariners, where you've sort of got an embarrassment of riches, right? You've got two guys in D. Gordon and Robinson Cano who are very, very good second basemen, right? But you're gonna make concessions. You're going to find a way to incorporate both. And I would assume that's exactly what they would be planning on doing.
I would assume that.
I just don't look at this as the rental. It is technically because he has not signed past this year. I just think there's an intent there. I don't think you give up the level of prospects, as much as they're not proven, everything we just said, as much as they haven't done a thing on the field yet at the big league level, I don't think you give up that much for 60-plus games.
Well, intent is one thing. You know, signing a guy is another thing. I mean, you may intend to sign him, but you may not be able to sign him. I mean, he may not want to sign with you. I think that the fact that this deal happened, like, you know, I mean, this does not mean, and the Indians I know made a deal too, this does not mean that all of a sudden trades, and it may, but it does not necessarily mean that all of a sudden trades are going to be cascading out, that there won't be a deadline this year, that they're all going to happen now.
Mm-hmm.
Because teams wait for the deadline because of the exact thing that we talked about. Then you're really renting a player for 2 months. You can get quality players for very little in terms of prospects. I mean, they're getting an extra month, extra 2 weeks, I should say, out of Machado for sure. And again, it's Dodgers' situation. It's the Indians' situation too. I mean, the Indians are in the same boat as the Dodgers. Those are two teams, in my opinion. If they make the playoffs, that's a given. I mean, that's an assumption. That's not a goal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Indians are 2 years removed from losing Game 7 of the World Series. The Dodgers lost Game 7 of the World Series last year. So they're making moves to do that. Whereas I think a lot of other teams, you know, the Mariners being amongst them, and I'm not saying they're necessarily going to wait, but the Mariners are looking to make the playoffs. The Brewers, a team looking to make the playoffs.
Right.
The Phillies, a team looking to make the playoffs, which would be a success if it happens for them. So it feels like you got two different markets working in baseball this year. You got the market of the teams that are looking for the piece to put them over. So the Dodgers, looking at that, I mean, they moved into first place. They're 2.5 games up. They're trending the right way. But again, it's not enough to make the world, it's not enough to just win the pennant. Indians, I mean, they got the most comfortable lead in all of baseball, I believe. 7.5 games in the Central. I think that's the biggest lead in any division in the game. Yet, they've got a gaping hole in their bullpen. They can't expect to be successful in the postseason with that bullpen that they have. So they've got a different sense of urgency about those deals. Where a team like the Mariners, for example, they're adding a stud left-handed bat. We know this in August. Just from injuries right now, they should be adding Zunino and Paxton back shortly. Erasmo Ramirez we'll find out how he did on his assignment, but I mean, we'll see. A guy they projected in their rotation, though, as a fifth man in their rotation, is another guy they're getting back. And they've got the luxury of kind of seeing how those guys do before they make a move, and they'll probably take advantage of that.
Well, this is a time where you start reading the rumors, you start reading the stories from the, you know, the insiders there, and Richard Justice from MLB.com has the Mariners as the front runner for J-Hap. As much as everything you said is true, they've got guys coming back, they've got a little bit of a luxury to add to a team that's 19 over 500. I know the first half didn't go the way you wanted at the very end, but you're still 19 games over 500. You have that second wild card spot.
You're in solid shape.
And you're bringing in additions that haven't been a part of this, especially in Cano, who's missing a massive amount of time. That's a huge bat to add, assuming he can pick up where he left off.
I don't think you could trade for a bat like that.
No.
Not that proven.
Not a lefty.
No.
So, I mean, you've got a nice luxury in that, but at the same time, you've got to be proactive. You can't go, well, we're going to be fine because Erasmo's going to be great and Cano's going to be great and just assume everybody's just going to be perfect when they come back. You've got no idea. So they've got to be proactive at the same time, as much as they do have something other teams don't, the hope of something.
Well, Jay Happ is making $13 million, so it's actually he's probably owed about five at this point of the season, something like that.
Yeah.
And as a free, he's a rent-a player.
And they've still got some money left over from what they saved on Cano.
But he's a rent-a player. I mean, he's a free agent at the end of the year. So he's a guy that that would have some appeal. I mean, he's got to have appeal from the Yankees. I mean, the Yankees are the one team, I think, in the American League that are truly chasing starters. Right? And then, mm-hmm. I don't know, they may be looking at Cole Hamels, I mean, who's supposed to be available from Texas. There are other, you know, I mean, geez, we've heard big names with the Mets that might be available, and the Yankees are probably looking in that direction. But the Mariners, Jay Happ is a guy who fits the bill. He's a guy you could probably get for a bargain price. I mean, a couple of low, I'm not saying bad prospects, but low minor prospects.
Just lower level.
Guys who are a few years away rather than ready right now. So, yeah, we'll see if they're active right now or not. But it's sort of dependent on, you know, usually the market waits. Usually you have some moves, but usually the market waits till the 31st. Teams mm-hmm. really want to figure out where they're at.
Yeah, we're gonna find out quickly. I mean, some deals are going to be made right away. The big-time deal, Manny Machado, and that's the one everybody expected to happen. Zach Britton's another guy that is supposedly has the interest of the Mariners. He of the Baltimore Orioles. So there would be some bullpen help for you. He's a guy, let's see, 3.68 ERA so far this year. He's got four saves. So somebody you can throw into the bullpen and shore that up there.
Mm-hmm. They're going to add players, that's for sure.
Yeah, I'd have no issues with Zach Britton getting over it. None.
I don't think I have issues with anyone because in all circumstances, they're looking at adding players. I mean, this is why we talked about the Red Sox. So you're just going to make a move because the Yankees make a move when you're already strong basically in every spot. You don't really have a hole.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the Mariners, they certainly have a hole, and we've talked about the hole in the outfield.
Center field.
In particular. And then starting pitching has been less than consistent, especially with getting a little bit of bumps and bruises and Felix Hernandez not pitching well. You have a need there. Bullpen as well. Most everyone but Diaz has struggled at some point this year, although Altavilla is a guy that we always forget about. We also may be able to add to the mix, who's a guy that you don't have to trade for. So they have needs, as opposed to some other teams that don't necessarily have obvious needs.
Mm-hmm.
So it's always intriguing, and to try and predict what Jerry DePoto is going to do is crazy anyway.
I just picture him in his office right now. He's probably got a desk full of phones, just a bunch of different cell phones sitting in front of him. He's got a hotline. He's got a landline. He's got
some burners.
Yeah, I just picture him just phones ringing, right? He's emailing. He's texting. He's on the phone. That's my vision of him. It's just going nuts in an office. Just he's got every GM on speed dial, and he's just got a list of possibilities. Here's our A wish list. This whatever five players. Here's what we'd love to get. Here's our B wish list. Here's who we can really feel like we can take a next step with. They're not the A level, but they can definitely add to what we're doing. Here's the C level. Okay, this is going to give us some depth. Hopefully, they live up to what they've been in the past. Maybe they're older. They're going to be cheaper, or expiring contract, what have you. I just feel like he's got it all dialed in, whether it comes to fruition or not, whether he's able to pull off what it is he wants to pull off. We'll see. They're in a unique spot where they've got players coming back, but they're also in sort of a downward spot where they don't have much to give other than we'll absorb salary. They don't have a lot to give in return.
Well, they just don't have rated prospects. You never know what scouts like on other teams' organizations. And like I said, you know, top 100 Major League Baseball prospects is no guarantee that those guys are going to make the majors. So it may be more difficult for them to make a trade for considering long-term results. But for short-term, it shouldn't be that hard at all.
By the way, you brought up what the Indians and the Padres did. That included a player we've talked about a few times who's the son of our production guy here. Russ Simber is
right.
Our production guy. His son, Adam Simber, was one of the particulars in that trade going from San Diego to Cleveland. I was in there talking to Russ going, I get geographically that's not great. San Diego's about as nice as it gets,
sure,
right?
Sure, and he's close.
You're going to Cleveland. But you went from a team that's about as nondescript and has as little interest as you could possibly imagine to a first-place team. You're going to be playing playoff baseball.
Yep.
I mean, it's
– Take the days off now.
You're playing with Terry Francona, who I think is a great manager and a great guy. As much as again, geographically, it's probably a tough pill to swallow, but I think this is a great thing for him.
I don't think geographically makes that big a difference to someone. I mean, that was his first year there with the big club.
It's got to be pretty cool playing your games in San Diego, living out there, though.
Yeah, but it's got to be more fun to play games that matter.
That's what I would think. That's why I said you congratulations.
You still got the offseason to live in San Diego. If there's a nice time to be in Cleveland, it's the summer.
That's the other thing I said. At least you're not having to worry about being out there when it's snowing. You know, April could be a little rough, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe heading into May, but yeah, at least you're not having to worry about dealing with it with the frigid temperatures of winter and having to play through all of that. So
exactly.
I think it's a great move for him. I'm happy for him.
Wish him luck.
Yeah.
Maybe he'll be pitching in the World Series this year.
How cool is that to know that, I mean, it's not certain, but right now you've got a nice lead in that division, as you touched on. You're more likely than not to be playing postseason baseball, whereas that was an absolute dream in San Diego. Wasn't happening this year.
No.
Maybe a couple years down the road.
Maybe.
You know, so
it hadn't happened in years there.
Yeah, but good for him, man. I'm excited for him.
Definitely.
I'm excited for him. So
I didn't realize he was in that deal.
Oh, you didn't know that? Yeah.
No.
Yeah, he went with Brad Hand. So it was Brad and Adam.
Well, and the Indians' weakness is bullpen. They're adding Andrew Miller's coming back, I think, the middle of next month. But their bullpen is the worst in baseball, I believe, ERA-wise.
Yeah, they need him.
Or it's close to it. Yeah, so he'll pitch.
They need this guy. So I just think it's awesome he's going to have some consequential games.
Definitely.
You know, in his first year in the big leagues, and he's already looking at a postseason. So good for Adam Simber. Good for him. And Brad, hey, it's a good deal for the Indians. It's what they need. It's
precisely what they need. The Indians, you know, when you kind of expected them to get what they needed, then add Miller. That lineup they have is still killer. American League is brutal, man. It is. Yankees, Red Sox, Astros, Indians are elite, elite teams. Even though the Indians have struggled some this year, mm-hmm. I mean, the other three are going to win 100 games. It's a weird year, man. It's a weird year.
Hey, we touched on the situation with Mike Trout yesterday a bit.
We sure did.
He's since commented on it. We didn't get into any of that.
We got to it right at the beginning, at the end of the show, right at the beginning of the story. And we both commented that, you know, this was beyond stupid for baseball to be in this fight, that the kid from Milwaukee Hader is going to thank his lucky stars because this is going to become now the big story with no baseball being played for 2 days, is Major League Baseball trashing their best player, which is not really what Rob Manfred did, but it's what the perception of it, what he did is.
Well, and here's what he said. Here's the audio of Rob Manfred.
The marketing of our players, raising their profile, growing their brand is a really high priority for us. And I think where Mike is relevant, our ability to do that in today's world is dependent on one thing. Player marketing is dependent on having the player. I think Mike Trout could raise his profile tomorrow if he decided that he wanted to engage a little more fully, give up some more of his free time. And that's his choice. I mean, that really is his choice. What player marketing takes in today's world, you got to be willing to be out there on social media. You got to be willing to put yourself out there, and you have to devote time to it. And we do think about it, and it is a priority for us.
So he's not trashing Mike Trout.
No, and I understand his position.
Sure.
But he's sort of laying it at his feet like, hey, man, you got to help us in this thing. Well, you've had other players that are sort of reluctant superstars or just really lacking in personality, but you've been able to market them. Derek Jeter being a prime example. He's as dull as it gets. He's never said an interesting thing in his life.
Yeah, part of that was playing in New York and them having success, going to World Series and making big plays on the big stage, something that Mike Trout hadn't had the opportunity to do. But you know, so like I said, I mean, he's not really trashing him, but that's how it's being perceived.
Well, and Trout
released
a statement.
That's how the Angels took it.
Did you see his statement?
I saw that he released a statement, though. I didn't hear it.
Yeah, he said, I've received lots of questions about Commissioner Manfred's recent statement. I'm not a petty guy and would really encourage everyone just to move forward. Everything is cool between the commissioner and myself. End of story. I am ready just to play some baseball. That's a very Mike Trout statement, isn't it?
Should have thrown in something about the weather. It's going to be a beautiful day tomorrow.
he responded after the game Tuesday to those comments saying, listen, I do as much as I can, but it's a long baseball season. I got to pick and choose when I want to do things and go from there. Another Mike Trout state. It's just, he's remarkably consistent.
Well, I mean, isn't that the most you've heard him say?
Yeah.
You ever heard him say anything about anything before?
No.
Neither have I.
I don't, you know, until I heard him speaking this, I'm going, yeah, I couldn't identify his voice, I don't think, if I heard it.
Well, it kind of speaks to what Rob Manfred said.
But at the same time, other leagues have been able to market guys that aren't particularly vocal or exciting.
We're not talking about exciting. We're talking about vocal.
Is Andrew Luck a vocal guy? He's as dull as they come to me, but the league markets him.
Well, I mean, but he's not the best player in the NFL.
But he's got an incredibly high profile.
Well, there's a lot of guys in the NFL that have high profiles.
And they market him. They market Andrew Luck.
I don't think comparing that to the NFL or NBA. Well, NBA is probably a little more fair. But, I mean, you know, I mean.
Why is it unfair to compare to somebody in the NFL?
How does baseball not market Mike Trout?
I just don't think they put any effort into getting him out
all
there.
All the All-Star game. Well, I mean, the NFL. Well, I'm not sure I know what you mean then. Because the NFL, what is the NFL making Andrew Luck do that Major League Baseball
is
not
He's part
making?
Of their marketing campaign. He's part of how they market the sport.
Well, the All-Star ads and the promos for the All-Star game all featured Mike Trout. He was the focal point of it, the centerpiece.
Yeah, the All-Star game, I'm talking about just throughout the regular season. You can't just go one hit with any one player and say, well, we're going to put everything behind him for this one event and he's going to be a star. I'm talking just throughout the regular season.
Well, who do you think baseball – I guess I don't understand – what baseball is doing instead of Mike Trout.
I don't think they do a good job really with anybody. I think that's where they fall short as a league is marketing their players, and we're using Mike Trout as the example because he's the best player. I don't think they market anybody particularly well.
Well, what
it's not just a Mike Trout thing. He just happens to be the best player who doesn't really have a personality.
What Manfred was talking about wasn't marketing players. It was players doing commercials.
Right. Well, he's being asked specifically
being on
about
Trout.
Though.
Right, right. So, it was players being on Twitter, which Andrew Luck doesn't do, I don't think. I mean, he does.
He is actually a little goofy on Twitter.
Is he?
Yeah, he writes his tweets in like how would you describe it, Curtis? Andrew his tweets.
Andrew Luck?
Yeah,
I don't think he has a Twitter account.
Yeah,
he's got that. There's that general Andrew Luck one.
Yeah,
No, that's not him.
Are you sure?
Yes,
I thought it was verified.
No, I don't think that's him. The one who writes like a Civil War.
Yeah,
general.
Yeah.
I don't think that's Andrew Luck.
All right, I got to look this up because I could have sworn that was verified and that was him. I was going, okay, there's a side of him you don't normally see, but maybe that's why you don't see it because it's not him. I got to look him up now. But I think that baseball as a league does not do a good job with their stars, period.
Well,
it's just they're being asked about Trout because he's the best player.
Right, but I mean, I'm not so baseball should spend more time advertising Mike Trout. Would be a general statement you're saying because I don't
all know. Of their stuff. Harper, Machado, those guys, Segura, the young stars, the guys you're building your league around.
When you do promos for games, you should be promoting players who aren't in those games.
Well, no,
I'm not sure exactly.
National marketing campaigns that all these leagues do. Yeah, your advertising's. Particular games, right? Specific
right.
games. The Angels versus the Mariners. It's Mike Trout versus Felix. It's Trout versus Nelson, whatever. They do that. I'm talking about just their national campaigns. I think they just come up short, whereas the NBA and the NFL do a much better job making those guys present. Now, the NFL.
Give me an example of an NFL marketing campaign.
I don't have their commercials memorized.
Okay.
I don't have their. Oh,
I just
this,
don't,
this
I just,
ad here.
I just don't know what you mean because I don't see them. I mean, the NFL, I see them marketing their games, promoting specific games when the season's going on. I don't see many commercials extolling the NFL in the off season, except on the NFL Network. NBA, same thing. I mean, I see them promoting their product when they're playing. I don't see national ads running all the time. I mean, I look, like I said, Manfred's point, I think, is that he wants his stars to be a little more media friendly. And by stars, he means Mike Trout. And his mistake was singling out a guy for what is perceived as criticism.
Right.
I didn't really have the sense that was criticism.
Well, and I'll defend him in singling him out because I think he was asked specifically about him.
Yeah.
So I don't think he said, hey, guys, here's the deal with Mike Trout.
I'm sure you're right about that.
By the way, he's not verified, Curtis. I thought it was a verified account. He's got 210,000 followers. So
it's a well-done account.
It is Captain Andrew Luck on Twitter. It says soldier, cult, simple man.
Nice.
And everything's written like a Civil War. Dearest mother, I write with exuberance today for the first time after many sunrises. I fired very my sidearm in full view of onlookers. It was a sight.
Very Civil War-ish.
It's very funny. It's very funny. All right, we'll talk more about what's happening with baseball. Mariners get back to business tomorrow when the White Sox come to town. We'll talk NFL with Brady Henderson coming up at 1 o'clock. Meanwhile, we heard Doug Baldwin talking about a little bit of a void as far as leadership goes with his team. So which Seahawks need to fill that void in 2018? We'll talk about it next with Bob Gross and Tom.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio.
This is Bob, Gras, and Tom.
Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle app.
Just laughing at dog videos. There's nothing better, man.
For
as negative and nasty as Twitter can be, there's some awesome follows on there.
And
if,
we
if you're an
be,
animal lover.
And we can be. We spend most of the breaks looking and laughing at dogs.
Oh, man, it's so good. So good. All right. Again, coming up at 1 o'clock, Brady Henderson from ESPN.com will join us. In 15 minutes, we'll tell you about one college head coach who thinks the fall of America will coincide with the fall of football. Wait a minute, what? Coming up. But we heard from Doug Baldwin yesterday. He was on with Q13, and he talked about a void in the leadership.
It is different. You know, there's a large void there. We had a lot of leadership that was just natural, honestly. Those individuals challenged the entire team. You know, whether you want to say it was good or bad, you know, they did push the entire team to maximize our potential.
So that's a fact. They're gone. Whether they became negative, whether it started to turn the wrong way, but there were definite leaders. They were definitely guys that pushed the younger guys. So who steps up to be those voices now? Do they need a vocal leader? Can they do it with guys that just show it on the field, sort of like Cam did? Cam did speak here and there, but mostly it was about watching him and watching what he did.
Well, he was a vocal leader in the locker room. He wasn't publicly.
He wasn't very vocal in the locker room either. It was just here and there.
But he had credibility when he spoke out.
Oh, he certainly did, yeah.
So that's you're answering your own question then. That's what you need.
But I'm saying you had somebody like Bennett who talked a lot. You had somebody like Sherman who talked a lot and showed it on the field, whereas Cam really didn't talk a lot in terms of –
You're talking about in the locker room.
Yeah. Yeah. He didn't talk a lot in the locker room.
No, but you know that Bennett and those guys did talk a lot in the locker room.
Yes. Yes. So who's going to be the next guy, whether it is a vocal guy or just a guy that by his example on and off the field becomes a leader like Cam? I put Cam in that category. They just watched him and they respected him. And when he did speak – they tuned in.
I don't think you can become a vocal guy. You either are one or you aren't one. I don't think you spend your time being quiet, then all of a sudden you become a huge vocal guy. I just don't see that. I mean, it's got to be, unless you haven't been anything so far, it's hard to imagine having great credibility if you've been a quiet guy for a long time and then all of a sudden are speaking out.
Right. That's what I'm saying. You don't have to be the vocal guy. It could be a guy that's just going to be the example setter out there. That's why I look at a guy like Bobby Wagner. He's not vocal, but he's a guy who can be the example. He's a guy that conducts himself the right way in terms of how he practices, how he approaches his craft. And he's a veteran. He's been through it. He's been there through the great times. He's been through the turmoil. He's a guy that, to me, is a logical guy on defense to be the one that people sort of gravitate to, the young guys they look to for leadership.
Yeah,
it's not Earl.
But we'll see if he's got that in him. I mean, you're right. He's the logical guy, but it's one thing to be the logical guy. It's another thing to have that in you, to be a guy who's going to pull guys aside and things like that. They all seem to do some of that. I think that, look, what Baldwin's talking about losing is the loud leadership in the locker room. His guys yelling.
Those are the obvious leaders. But Cam's a part of that, and he's polar opposite.
You've lost him, too.
Right. That's what I'm saying, is you've got two different versions
line
of leaders.
Baldwin's line is we lost a lot of leaders. They did.
Mm-hmm.
They lost the quiet leaders, they lost the public, they lost the loud leaders, if that's the right way to put it.
Yeah, they were loud.
Yeah, so I mean, we'll see who steps in there. Might be some new guys. The void is there, but
can it be a new guy? Can't be a
rookie.
Can't
be a brand new guy.
Could it be a Dwayne Brown?
Well, he could be a quiet leader and certainly would be one on the offensive line.
I'm not even targeting specific sides of the ball. I'm just looking at who's going to be a guy, a voice that people will respect. He's a guy with tenure in this league who's been incredibly good in this league. I think he's a guy that sort of commands respect, even though he hasn't been here for an entire season yet. I think if he were to sort of assume some of that or start speaking out, he's a guy people are going to follow.
I think you're going to find guys to do it. I think that what the Seahawks had was rare and is not going to be recaptured. Unless you have guys like that, and maybe that, and like we've been saying all along, maybe they don't want to recapture that. They don't want guys really speaking their own minds, which was sort of what the Seahawks seemed to be. You know, you had guys who weren't stud players who spoke their minds, like Bruce Irvin, for example, and guys like that. I mean, they may be trying to change the culture entirely. So I don't know how important it is, really, because, I mean, you're talking about professional player. I mean, you know, what Doug Baldwin is talking about is what guys are supposed to do anyway. I mean, it just seems like guys wind up being that. But in Bennett and in Sherman and guys like that, you had unique characters that are not going to – their roles are not going to be filled. There's not going to be someone who steps in and is like Richard Sherman. There's not going to be someone who steps in and is going to be like Michael Bennett.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't think they're going to be guys like that.
I don't think they need to be like them.
Well, they're not going to be.
Just the guys that are going to be the ones that the young guys look to, the one that guys look to when things are rough. Right? They're always those guys. Whether they're the best players or not, there are guys in every locker room, every clubhouse that guys will sort of look to when they're hitting a rough patch or whatever's going on.
Well, that's veterans. I mean, I think that's –
And that's what I'm talking about. I don't expect a rookie to step up there. I don't expect Ethan Posick to take over the room. But
I mean, you're not going to have guys taking over the room like you had before. I mean, there are always veterans there for you to go to and talk to. But in terms of a leadership circumstance, and Baldwin kind of hinted at that they may want to go in a different direction, you're not going to replace those guys. You're not going to have new vocal guys who are demanding this and demanding that. You're not necessarily looking for that. You no longer are, you know, it doesn't seem like you're going after guys like that anymore, specifically.
I think Russell is a guy that needs to figure out a way to command more respect in that locker room. I think he's got respect as to who he is as a player and what he's capable of doing. I don't know that that people listen to his words in that locker room and say, yes, we're with three.
Did you watch the ESPYs last night?
No.
Yeah, I'm not sure Russell Wilson's ever going to be that guy.
What'd he do?
Well, it just was Russell Wilson.
Was he
with Ciara?
Was he presenting an
award?
Showing
off shoes. Yeah, they went out and presented, I think, best female athlete.
Okay.
So
what did he do that led you to believe he's never going to be that guy?
Just his look, his way. It just, he hasn't been that guy. I just don't see him being that guy. I mean, I think, and in Baldwin, I think you're taken care of there. I mean, and he's a leader on the field. And there's no question that they follow him on the field, and that's fine. But, you know, I mean, they had, for example, I mean, and I actually watched more of the ESPYs than I thought I would. They had Jim Kelly's presentation.
Yeah, we'll play some of that.
Which was done by Elway and Marino.
Yeah.
I mean, and I thought to myself, well, there's three guys who would fit the definition of quarterback leader.
Mm-hmm.
I think for Aaron Rodgers last night was a little embarrassing because they went to him on every single shot because it was his girlfriend doing a mediocre job as hosting.
Oh, Danica? So she was mediocre?
She was mediocre.
I didn't watch a moment of it.
I actually watched more than I thought I would.
So was she poorly received?
Yeah. I mean, she wasn't poorly received, but she just wasn't – she didn't hit a home run.
Okay.
And they went to him every single time to show him.
And how was he responding?
Well, a big grin.
Okay.
You know, I mean, it's his girlfriend after all. But, you know, I think this is one of the questions about the Seahawks this year. This is why some people, as the guys we're talking about on the morning show today, really have no expectations for the Seahawks. I think they're really going to miss – there's really going to be a leadership void on this team.
There might be. I'm not saying you need to be loud.
Well, I agree with you. See, I don't know how important I think that it is. I mean, it remains to be seen. I think that every team's got a hierarchy. Every team has got veteran guys who command respect, and I think it's position by position. You know, guys have leaders. I mean, I think from the offensive line standpoint, let's just talk about them for a second because you brought up Duane Brown.
Mm-hmm.
That's a huge plus to have going into this year versus what you had last year. You had a basically unproven bunch of guys. You had for what now, 3 or 4 years before this year, had an unproven bunch of guys. What could you say? Justin Britt was sort of the leader of the offensive line when training camp started last year. That's a guy who was on his third position in 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
That was good his final year, but doesn't really have that kind of credibility.
Right.
Duane Brown has credibility, and now he's here for training camp too.
Yes.
So you got a different sort of feeling entirely with that group. I mean, linebacker's fine. Secondary is, I mean, who even knows what the secondary group is like right now? With Earl Thomas not there, who's the leader of the secondary group? Shaquille Griffin, who's played 1 year?
Probably.
I mean, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very obvious question to ask. All right, who's going to be the leader out there? I mean, Byron Maxwell is a guy with experience.
He's got some experience, though. He's
been there before. So
he's seemingly got his own issues going on.
Yeah, I'm not sure what's up with that. But, yeah, so, you're right. There's no obvious answer to it. It would be Earl, but he's not going to be there. It's not him.
So it's going to be an interesting circumstance. It's one of the things that got to be figured out during training camp.
All right, coming up, one college head coach thinks the fall of America will coincide with the fall of football. Wait a minute, what? Coming up with Bob Gross and Tom.
Hold up. Hey. Hey, wait a minute.
What?
Wait a minute. Now.
Wait a minute.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute, Doc.
Wait a minute. What?
More dog videos. Sorry. It is Wait a Minute What here with Bob Cross and Tom. Coming up at 1 o'clock, our buddy Brady Henderson from ESPN.com will join us. We'll talk about some of the leadership roles that could be filled with his team, what he thinks is going to happen with Earl Thomas. And I had somebody send in a text. I'll find it in a moment. But it was along the lines, I'll paraphrase, something along the lines of the Browns will be 9-7, the Seahawks will be 7-9.
Mm-hmm.
Come on, man.
Well, the Browns might be.
They might be decidedly better than they were as a winless team. They're not a 9-win team next year. I'll take that bet right now, and the Seahawks will not be a losing team. I'll take that bet as well.
Okay, well, I may bet you on that.
I'll take both of those.
I won't bet you on the Browns.
You've got more faith that the Browns won't be a 9-win team than you do that the Seahawks won't be a losing team.
No, I have more. Yes. Wait a second. I have more faith that the Browns will not be a winning team than I have that the Seahawks might be a losing
team. You feel much more comfortable
team.
With that bet. You're like, I don't want that bet because I don't think they're going to be a 9-win team.
Right, but the Seahawks could definitely be a 7-9 team.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Wait a minute. we'll get into that. All right, we told you about a coach who thinks that the downfall of America will coincide with the downfall of football.
This reminds me of the coach from Dazed and Confused.
Oh, yeah.
Did
you sign that paper yet?
Yeah, exactly.
Randall Floyd. He's Larry Fedora, who I guess is the North Carolina head football coach. He was at ACC Media Day. Here's what he said.
There will be decline of our country, there's no doubt. Yeah, I there's no doubt in my mind. I think because the lessons that you learn in the game of football relay to everything that's going to happen in the rest of your life. And if we stop learning those lessons, we're going to struggle. And, you know, I think in some ways we're struggling more now than we ever have. Are we ever going to be a perfect country? No, not by any means. But I do think the game of football has had a major impact on who we are as a country.
Okay, listen. We make our living in sports. I love sports. You love sports. It's our being. It's our identity. But come on, man.
That's absurd.
Come on, man. What are you talking about?
Number one, not all of us play football.
I love football as much as anybody.
I'd say a majority of us, and by the way, women are the majority in America. I'm going to say that the majority of women, a vast majority of women, have never played football.
Probably true.
Haven't learned any life lessons playing football. From the guy's standpoint, it's about half.
If that.
So you're talking about 20% of the people who played football at a high school level, even.
It's the downfall of America. I mean, I love the NFL. I love football. But stop it. I would be depressed and sad if it went away. But talking about the downfall of America.
There are plenty of other things that could wreck America.
Oh, my goodness, man. That's
keep coaching, coach.
Yeah, that's awesome. All right,
I'll keep this guy on the radar for comments in the future.
Oh yeah, he seems to be a loose cannon.
Yeah, I can sense like a 48-7 loss to North Carolina State post game press conference,
and he just
being in our future.
Him.
Yeah,
yeah. Well, that's a good idea. We got to keep an eye on Larry Fedora. So, all right, story number two, Rob Manfred, who we were talking about earlier in relation to Mike Trout, he also had thoughts on other things, and one of those things was the possible expansion of Major League Baseball.
I do think 32 teams would help us. It opens up a whole host of things. You get to four-team divisions, which work better in the schedule. You could geographically realign. You could have a little different playoff format, a lot more flexibility. In terms of cities, you know, I want to be careful here because, you know, anytime you single one out, other cities feel slighted, but we have a real list of cities that I think are not only interested in having baseball, but are viable in terms of baseball. Places like Portland, Las Vegas, Charlotte, Nashville in the United States, certainly Montreal, maybe Vancouver in Canada. We think there's places in Mexico we could go over the long haul.
I think up in Vancouver, they're going, wait a minute, what? Vancouver, yeah. Us?
Is there a thirst for baseball in Vancouver?
I don't know that there is.
Portland would be fun.
Portland, there's a thirst for baseball. Portland has already got a grassroots operation working, and I was glad that at least they were mentioned first.
Doesn't Ryan own a league out there? John Ryan own
he
a team?
He owns a collegiate wood bat league.
The Pickles.
Team. Yeah, the Portland
in Oregon, right?
Yeah, the Portland Pickles.
Portland Pickles. but
Portland has had a grassroots movement going for a while. I think they would be a leading candidate. Vegas is just being said because Vegas is now they're realizing what a hot market this is and why haven't we been there before.
Well, you'd have to build a dome because you're not playing outdoors in the summer in Vegas.
But that's a piece of cake. I mean, that's 3 days of rental car receipts. And you could build a dome stadium. I mean, that's not an issue there. I haven't heard Charlotte before.
Or Nashville.
Nashville before, although Nashville's a terrific market. I would think Portland would be a leading candidate. You need another team up in this part of the country anyway.
Yes, as selfishly as a Mariner fan, I want that rivalry. I want that team that close to you. That'd be awesome. I'm on board for Portland, man. Count me in.
I am too. I think Portland's got a real shot at it.
That would be outstanding. So there you go. A couple of stories for Wait a Minute What. Coming up next, who will fill that leadership void on this Seahawks team in the upcoming season? Brady Henderson of ESPN.com will answer those questions and many more. He joins us next with Bob Gross and Tom.